James Fallon is a neuroscientist at the University of California, Irvine, and the author of The Psychopath Inside. This is James Fallon. I'm Duncan Yammy. You're listening to Dunk Tank.
You know, it's funny listening to Monkman. You know, he's a really bright guy, right?
Wait, which guy?
Didn't you,
Sam Vaknin?
Yeah.
What's your opinion on that guy?
He's very bright, of course, and he's gay, you know, a complete maverick. And it's just that he's so, you know, I don't know. To me, I like listening to him, but he's so strident.
Yeah.
But you don't know how to, you know, deconflate two things, because I have a lot of Israeli friends. I've been, you know, Israel a bunch of times and everything. And there's that style of it, the Israeli intellectual, very strident. This is the way it is. It must be that, you know, it's that sort of, they're always sure of themselves. They really push it. And that can, you know, I don't know how people respond to that. But I don't know if it has anything to do with that or it's just really just his narcissism. They were both together.
I think it's a little both.
A bit of both. And because a lot of what he, you know, claims is really not known. Right. He says he's very sure about things. The people, you know, there really isn't research to back it up. And he's not really a research scientist. Right. So you wouldn't expect it. He's a popularizer of a disorder, which is very great. You know, but you can tell he doesn't have the mind of a scientist. It's, you know, we don't really don't know anything. And he makes it seem that we know a lot. And we just, you know, that level of confidence, it's really doesn't work. I mean, if scientists hear it, or, you know, who are used to, you know, how difficult it is to prove anything, and how you can't really say anything definitive, especially like he's saying, and other people too. But if you are very cautious, then people, it doesn't work for media, because people like to have that, this is the way it is. That's my way, you know, they like that because it's black and white. So he's just extremely black and white. And it doesn't follow the nature, the sort of the state of the art nature of spectral disease, you know, spectrum disorders, which everything is now, and how much confidence you can have in anything. And he's always 100% confident.
Well, do you think that these personality disorders are even like a legitimate category, or do you think in 50 years we're going to look back at them as some relic?
Well, we don't. We've been involved for about almost 14 years, because our group was really started the personalized medicine or individualized medicine in psychiatry, that is biological psychiatry. And this, we met every year and worked together and published together, and how, really the basis of these things is spectral disorders, not categorical disorders. And then I work with the National Institute of Mental Health and give talks there for psychopathologies like schizophrenia, et cetera, and showed them how we, you know, the mathematical model we use, but how we look at it not as categorical disorders, like you've got this or this or this, because there's so much overlap. You look at the Venn diagram, so much overlap in these disorders. Now, the traits are true. So we look at the traits and then statistically regress the traits against the, you know, the brain imaging, the genetics, the psychometrics, and that really works. And so you're almost like treating traits, right? You're not treating a single disorder. So a lot of the thing is, but it's driven by this need for categorical information in the general public. Doctor, am I going to die or not? Do I have this or this? Is he guilty or innocent? The insurance companies push this, pharmaceutical companies push it. The average person wants to have the sort of definitive answer. They don't want to hear what guys like I have to say, but they like what, you know, Vaknin says, because he's very definitive. There's this and this, but it's not the way things are. You know what I mean? It's what people like to hear. They don't want to hear, well, it's maybe this, it's 50% that, there's overlap here, because they don't even know statistics. They don't know probability. And they don't like this way of thinking, because it sounds very almost evasive, but that's the nature of it. So we've been doing this work almost 15 years, and we're at the beginning of it. And so a lot of the talks I give, you know, academic talks and to clinicians, different universities, are about that, about biological psychiatry, not about the psychopathy thing. It's kind of a, you know, that's just like a, okay. But yeah, it's about how you do that and how that's a different way of looking at it. Since working with the NIMH and NIH, it's now the DSM-5 categorization is going away from that toward this, what's called RDOC, which is a research domain criteria, analysis of traits, like I just talked about, and not what, you know, other people want to think about, like personality disorders. So you're really looking at the traits and the, you know, and the combination of the traits and what's the basis of it. But still, you know, you need a psychiatrist who knows this stuff to give you a handle on how people think about it. And that mixes in. It's not like the psychiatry, the talk therapy, or the structured and unstructured interviews with psychiatrists or psychologists or experts. They're still very useful because how the person thinks about it helps differentiate whether they have, for example, psychopathy or sociopathy, or whether they have narcissistic disorder or narcissistic personality disorder. They're very different things. And so those interviews, that psychiatry is still very important.
Well, couple questions I have. First off, wait, what is the difference between narcissistic personality disorder and just narcissistic disorder?
Well, somebody like Trump has narcissistic traits. But to him, it's a game that he writes about it. It's making deals. And so he knows the difference. And he also has in his family, he's empathetic. He's got, you know, emotional empathy. And so he doesn't qualify for psychopathy or NPD. He doesn't qualify for a personality disorder at all. But he has the traits of being, you know, narcissistic and ego-driven. But that works, you know, with a lot of people. Obama, a tremendous amount of narcissism. You know, the way he's a swagger, he's too cool for school, he walks by the, you know, as he walks off the plane, and instead of saluting the military, he's got the cup in the hand, he just blows them off. That's all very narcissistic stuff. And so people talk about, but the thing is, Trump is completely open about it. And here's the deal. The guy who wrote the DSM-5, the expert who wrote the description of it for the DSM-5, he says this thing about Trump being a narcissist, NPD, or psychopathy is a complete misdiagnosis. He says it's bullshit. And he hates Trump. But he said they're trying to put him into somehow he's got these disorders. He doesn't. So he doesn't fit at all. The real person, you know, the person who really shows the traits for psychopathy is Bill Clinton. He's the king. JFK, FDR had it. Bill Clinton is like, hits it out of the ballpark in terms of psychopathy. And I know people who were close to him for years and Hillary. And yeah, he is, he doesn't have a sense of a moral sense to him at all. It doesn't feel guilty about it. It gets away with it. That's psychopathy. That's not sociopathy. So he's really closest to it of any president. But people want to hate Trump, so they want to give him that. But even the guy who hates Trump wrote all the clinical, all the criteria said he doesn't have it. He's not psychopathic or NPD. It's just a misdiagnosis, just because people hate him.
I get that, but he does. Like, if I met that guy in an ordinary setting, I mean, there is a certain level where he's braggadocious and all these things, and it helps him politically and in his business. But regardless, he seems, as a person, unbalanced in some way, no?
I don't, you know, the people I know who know him, you know, there's a private life and there's a public life. In the private life, he's not like that, but he's a businessman. He's not a politician, right? So the way he talks is like so obnoxious from a politician, but he's a businessman. So it's just like, and plus he didn't give a shit about this. You know, it's like he doesn't need the job. And so he doesn't need to really lie. All the things about lying are not really what you'd call lies, right? It's even what Bill Clinton did. If somebody asks you, did you have an affair? And you say, no, that's not a true, like, positive lie. Because he could have said it's none of your fucking business, right? So, you know, I think he gets off the hook on that, even though he's a liar. He's a liar, but he's not like in that way. Somebody like Joe Biden, if you go through the history of it, lies to get ahead. He knows it's a lie. And he hides things, and he's done that, and he's really got the pathological line. I went through the analysis of all the claims to be the lies, you know, that came out like immediately. And if you look through them, a lot of them are, you know, it breaks down about 20%, 30%, and then 50%. These are like predictions. Like you say, the economy is going to get better, and in 6 months, it doesn't get better. People call that a lie. It's not a lie. It's a bad prediction. Oh, yeah. No, this is a part of the list. It's like he lied about it. The other thing is the nitpicking lie. It's like, you know, if you're with somebody, let's say your wife is mad at you, or your boy, or your buddy's mad at you. You and I caught a big trout. You say, I just caught a 13-pound trout. They go, no, you're lying. It was 12 pounds, 14 ounces. You know, the nitpicking. Most of them are that. They're the nitpicking things. And because I had to go through like 1,000, but not 1,000, you know, cross section. And the other thing is, you know, there's probably 1% that's hard to tell, but most of these are nitpicking things that people like ex-wives or ex-husbands say when they're trying to get you on nitpicking things, or their mistakes about the predictions. Now, or they're just, you know, somebody flubs it, right? They get it wrong. But if you know, if I said to you, you know, the temperature in Chicago today was 30 degrees. Well, it's so easy to check. People are saying that's a lie. You don't lie about that stuff. But a lot of the lies are absurd, like statements that doesn't help anything. They're so easy to check up on. The ones that Joe Biden is telling are things he's hid. These are it's very clear. So,
right, like the marching in the civil rights movement and things like that.
Oh, there's like 20 of them. Yeah, I mean, big ones. That he knew her one. Then he goes back and says, well, I didn't do that when he's caught. But those are things that are hard to find out. So he lies because he doesn't think people can find the old information. And when they do, he's caught. So he's a real pathological liar. But with the other thing with this guy who's the expert, the psychiatrist is the expert who wrote an article about this on NPD, he goes, Trump is the most transparent a person he's ever seen or known. He said, as a politician especially, he tells you everything. There are no lies. It's completely open. So he's like the opposite of that. But he's not political, so he says stupid things. And he's narcissistic too, right? But to him, you know, it's partially a game, partially sincere. And so, but all the things that they're saying, I mean, I just talked to a bunch of academics, professors on this, and they went through, they read the list, and most of the list comes from the month after he was elected. He hadn't even done anything yet. And they're already out with all this stuff, right? It's the same thing. So it's like, it had nothing to do with his actual behavior, but things that, you know, a dossier type of thing. They were reading off, and I went through and I, you know, tried to explain it to him. I said, why don't you go after him? I said, I didn't vote for him. I'm not going to vote for him. But you're going after him on all these bogus psychiatric grounds as opposed to his policies and what he's actually done. But they can't do that, so they don't do it. So they have to keep going back to this stuff. So it's nonsense.
Well, one of the things I also wanted to ask you, jumping back to that bit about Sam Vaknin, I think part of the reason why he resonates with people on some level is because you're right, he's not a scientist, but he's more of like he's almost like a literary guy, and he's kind of using like myths sort of to describe personality. And that, I mean, one of the things that like Chomsky said once was that he thought that ultimately things like literature were going to help us understand human beings on a deeper level than science ever could. Do you think that that's a legitimate point of view, or do you disagree?
Well, linguistics and literature certainly say a lot. That Noam and I were on the same board together, three of us on a board, a language board, an app for kids. But anyway, because I know a lot of linguists and you know, it's interesting, and I do a lot of reading. Now, yeah, it was a natural interest. But I think, you know, he's just strutting his stuff, because the literature doesn't tell you why things are there. The science will tell you why things happen, right? But it doesn't say exactly what happens or other interpretations. So that's why you can, I watch a lot of history, read a lot of history, a lot of politics, and, you know, study dictators and everybody going back 3,000 years. So I look at the, you know, from a, you know, a literature point of view. I mean, everybody in my family is like a literature nut. My father, my brothers are all like Shakespeare scholars and everything, not scholars, but, you know, buffs and readers. And they're all into that. I'm the only scientist. So I've heard it all my life, and therefore I'm very comfortable with that. And I understand that and how linguistics is important. But it doesn't tell you why things happen, which is, if you're a scientist, that's what you want to know.
And then the other thing I wanted to ask you is, do you think that, like, talk therapy, the kind that is commonly, I've heard things about, like, cognitive behavioral therapy being successful, but, like, basic psychoanalysis, do you think that that is, you're talking about your personalized treatment methods for mental health, you think that, like, psychoanalysis has any role in there, or do you think it's kind of outdated, or...
Well, psychoanalysis is, you know, it's a quaint sort of old thing, and there's still, you don't have to be a physician to do it. It's not a psychiatric, it's not a physician thing. So psychoanalysis is often not taken seriously. That's different than talk therapy. Talk therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, is a psychiatric or psychological tool, is, you know, very much important. And in one way of understanding it is that, you know, if you look at a lot of connections in the brain, there are ways to access the limbic areas, the emotional areas of the brain that are at the base of the brain that you can't get to with machines, right? But you can get to through connections. So if I talk to the part of your brain that connects to those, then I can start to retrain it over, you know, a fair amount of time. And that would be the, you know, the basis of it. So we take that seriously. And the talk therapy also lets you know how, like I mentioned, you know, about 10 minutes ago, what people think about what they do in their behaviors that don't come out in the biological stuff. And so that helps distinguish personality disorders from regular disorders and other things. It's like, what do you think about this? And that comes through talk therapy. And so it's both the retraining part, but also evincing, you know, finding out how people think about how they think and what they do.
I had part of the reason why I asked is I had a friend who was in therapy, and they were asking her about, like, her dreams and stuff like that. And part of me was just thinking that there's no way that this is the most productive use of her time. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, you finish. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like,
yeah. I gotta do another podcast in 2 minutes. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so go ahead. You think the analysis of dreams is a worthwhile psychological tool?
Well, analysis of dreaming per se is very, very good tool as a probe, you know, because you can get a lot of information about brain connections and brain functions. The analysis of dreaming is, like, really quite good and hip and useful. The analysis of the content of dreams simply takes too long now. Even if it was good, nobody's got the amount of time to do it. It's too expensive, right? So that amount of time to sit down and to go through psychoanalysis, it's extraordinarily expensive to do it correctly, and therefore it's become quite useless that way. That's a practical thing on the cost and time because of the, you know, the state of medicine and insurance. But beyond that, it's interesting and fun, but it's been mostly poo-pooed. I'm not talking about talk therapy or CBT. I'm talking about psychoanalysis itself. And I've worked with with psychiatrists who've done psychoanalysis with me, and they come up with the same conclusion as just the psychiatric testing. So, there's consistency. So that was interesting for me. So, but other people, I don't know. All the psychiatrists I know, I would say 90% of them poo-poo psychoanalysis for those two reasons.
The last thing, I'll just a one word answer here, and I'll let you go. Who do you think is going to win the election, Trump or Biden?
Oh, I don't know. It's right now dead even if you make all the correct adjustments. likely voters, people who don't want to talk on a phone where their wife or husband or colleagues are listening. And that is, you know, and also the it's about 5% to up to 7% undecided. Those will almost definitely go to Trump. So if you take all those in, it's dead even right now. It depends on, you know, if Joe Biden actually gets, you know, interviewed seriously and has to talk a cappella in de novo. That's, you know, it really depends on that, I think. But right now, I think it's pretty dead even.
All right. Well, I'll let you go, James.
Okay, I got to go though. Go.
Wish we had more time,
so
but
we can talk about this thing.
All right. Talk. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you to James Fallon, and thank you for listening to Dunk Tank. I'm Duncan Gammy. See you next time.